introduction. Thanks to the organizers for inviting me here. CMSS stands for the Merkle Signature System, and the C stands for modification. This is really work that was done together with Luis Carlos Coronado Garcia, Eric Dahn, Martin Döring, and Elena Klintsevich, who are researchers in my group. So this is about digital signatures. And since I teach introduction to cryptography frequently, the first question that people, of course, ask us is, do we really need these digital signatures? So I remember when digital signatures were invented, people were thinking about digitally signing contracts, signing emails. I don't think that this is done much. So somehow, at a certain point, people thought, well, we really don't need digital signatures. But so the first thing I would like to do is, like, as a warm-up, and since I thank you all very much that you are still here, to show you a few pictures why we really need digital signatures. So, okay, so this is one example. When you run Microsoft Windows XP, you get automatic updates. And this is very important, because otherwise your system may be open for attackers. So you need these updates, but somehow your system must know that the updates really come from Microsoft. And then what we try to do is we try to find how they make sure that the updates are really from Microsoft. And what the Microsoft TechNet says is, this initial data is transferred, so this is using HTTPS, and updates, this is what it says, updates are transferred using HTTP, so that they don't say that they use HTTPS, and the data packages downloaded to the user's system by Microsoft are digitally signed. Now, this is, of course, an important application of a digital signature, because if someone manages to sign updates in the name of Microsoft, then say, you sign an update that says erase the hard disk next week or something, yeah, then the world might have some problem, because there are, I think it is 80% of the people in the world are using Microsoft Windows XP. So I think, I mean, this shows that digital signatures, in particular RSA signatures, have become really important. And I don't know whether people are aware of this. Maybe I'm wrong, but I've shown this several times in Germany to people, and it really seems that they are so important that you could, maybe this is something for, I don't know, I don't want to say this, but anyway. Okay, and this process is not only a process that is used by Microsoft, also, of course, Linux uses it, various macOS uses this, and then all the antivirus systems also use it. Now, it is important to see, of course, we really need automatic updates of antivirus systems, because the attackers invent viruses all over the place, so you really need the updates. On the other hand, how do you know that the update that you get on a frequent basis is really the update from Norton or Sophos or whatever. So we are in a situation that we need a digital signature. Here's another example where digital signatures are used. There's this Department of Homeland Security. This is American. And they now ask all countries in the world to put biometric data on their passports, and we Germans also do this. And the biometric data are digitally signed. And what we are using, so our National Security Agency wanted us to use elliptical signatures. So all new passports have digitally signed elliptical signed pictures on them. And then access control to the biometric data. I think in 2007 we will have fingerprints on the passports, and then the access control will again be secured by digital signatures. So here are a few people that are responsible for the invention of digital signatures. One person is in the audience, the others are not. I don't know whether you recognize them all. This is certainly Ron Rivest, Adi Shamir, Len Edelman. And these pictures are the two people that are responsible for inventing elliptic curve cryptography. Victor Miller is here. This is the only picture that I found, and this is Neil Kopitz. So now the question is, how big should the key sizes be? And what we see here is, this is this paper of Lenstra in 2004, which is a paper that followed the Lenstra-Verhol paper earlier. And you can see that he expects that the RSA keys will be growing very fast. And he also expects this growth for the elliptic curve keys. So this is what they think, but he thinks what will happen. So in 2046, we will have 3,000 bit RSA, and we will 188 bit ECDSA, which is something that is not so big. However, as you know, there's quantum computers. People are sort of, yeah, but so this is the quantum computer that people were using factor 15. But nevertheless, I mean, I feel that quantum computers are a symbol for unexpected attacks. So what I feel is, number one, digital signatures are really necessary. Number two is we have no idea what is going to happen with digital signatures in the future. So I think we should be aware of the fact that the world really depends on digital signatures, and there is currently no replacement inside. And there's two systems we rely on: this elliptic curve and RSA. I mean, these are used in practice, of course. N2 is there, but it is not yet in the system. So RSA is the standard one that is in the systems. ECDSA is slowly coming, and quantum computers will make RSA, DSA, ECDSA, and everything that is currently used insecure, and people are making progress in this area. So the question is, what should we do? And we feel that we should do something about post-quantum cryptography. And post-quantum cryptography stands for the search for alternative crypto systems that do not rely on number theory. All right, so let's see what we could do there. So what are alternatives? Okay. So first of all, if we think about digital signatures, we can look into the theory, the results of theory. And there is a result of Rumpel from 1990, and that result says one-way functions are necessary and sufficient for secure digital signatures. You don't need trapdoor functions. So digital signatures can be, I'm not saying efficient ones, but if we have one-way functions, which looks kind of easy, and hash functions, the cryptographic hash functions would suffice, we would have digital signatures. So on the other hand, there's this other result, which is kind of, I try to understand this, I'm not sort of an expert in this. It says black box one-way functions are not sufficient for public key encryption. And this is a result from 1989, and there are a number of results in this neighborhood which says if we want to do public key encryption, we need much more. So philosophically speaking, signatures should be much easier than public key encryption. Or, in fact, signatures are much easier than public key encryption. Now let's see why this is true in practice. There is this interesting signature scheme of Merkel. This is Merkel. And in 1979, he invented a signature scheme which is purely based on hash functions. So let me just try to explain to you how the signature scheme works. Well, here's the idea. So first of all, what you need is a hash-based one-time signature scheme. I will tell you in a minute what this is. And in this one-time signature scheme, you need one key pair per signature. This is not so efficient. It is not so efficient for software updates. It is not so efficient for web servers and so forth. So, I mean, one-time signatures are a nice idea. But then Merkle used the idea of hash trees. And his idea was, okay, I mean, this is a very nice idea, you know, this one-time signature scheme. Why don't we do this? And this is actually a picture from Merkle's PhD thesis. So you find it in there. So the idea is use an authentication path that reduces the validity of many verification keys to the validity of one public key. Let me explain to you how this works. So now I explain this in two steps. So first of all, and I apologize to those who know this all anyway, but I have experienced that this is not so common among people who deal with signatures, so I would like to explain to you the Lambert-Diffie one-time signature scheme. So first of all, the system parameters are a hash function. So we just need a cryptographic hash function. And it maps arbitrary long strings to strings of length. What is this number? N. Now the key generation works as follows. We need a key signature key and a verification key. And the signature key consists of random numbers. These are random strings of length N. These are two N random strings of length N. X1 of 0, X2 of x1 of 1, x2 of 0, x2 of 1, up to xn of 0, xn of 1. And this is the symbol for the private key. To obtain the public key, the verification key, apply the hash function. And you see here we only need a one-way function, because these are strings of length n. And so you obtain, applying this hash function, y1 of 0, y1 of 1, up to y1, yn of 0, up to yn. So basically, what you have is 2n random numbers and their values under the hash function. Okay? So here is an example. This is what it might look like. So this is what the signature key might look like. So these are, now n is 3, so we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 strings of length 3, and these strings are the signatures key, and the verification key is again 6 strings, and they're all of length 3. Okay? So how do we sign? Well, now we take our message. We apply the hash function. This time we really need the hash function as a hash function. So we obtain the hash, which is of length n. Now we use our signature key. And what we do is the signature simply consists of those values in the signatures. So the signature consists of those values in the signature key that are parameterized by the bits. So if this bit is 1, we will publish as a signature x1 of 1. However, if h1 is 0, we will publish x1 of 0. Likewise, we do it for x2. Likewise, we do it for all the others. Let me give you this example. So now this is the document, we hash it. All right, now you can guess what the signature is. So now we use the key. This is the secret key up there, so we have to use, let's see. Okay. All right, so this is x1 of 1, this is x1 of 0, this is x1 of 1. Since the first bit in the hash is 0, we use this 0, 1, 0, 0, 1, 0. Second bit is 1, so we have to use 0, 0, 1, 0, 0, 1. And the third bit is 0 again, so we have to use 0, 1, 1. So that's the signature, okay? Now, how does the verification work? Well, the verifier obtains his verification key, which he had anyway, and the document. So in advance, he got this verification key. Now he applies the hash function, which is public. He obtains the hash value that the signer also had. And now what he does is, he says, okay, let's write down the part of the verification key that corresponds to this hash value. So he writes down y1 of h1, y2 of h1, up to yn of hn. Then, now, he knows that if this is the correct signature, these should be the corresponding inverse images of those. So what does he do? He applies h, he obtains the hash values, and he compares. And if the comparison works, the signature is valid, otherwise it's not valid. Let me quickly go through the example. So this is what we have seen. So the verifier obtains the document, he obtains the signature that we have produced before. He can apply the hash, he gets the same hash. He writes down the corresponding part of the verification key, so that is 011 because this was 011, 010 because this was 010, 11, sorry, 100100. He applies the hash, he gets the same thing, and he sees it works. Yes. Okay, now let's see what happens if we change. Okay, so have you seen what I changed? So we changed 2010 to 2006, which leads to a different hash, which leads to a different collection of from the verification key. Unfortunately, this doesn't work anymore. You can, of course, change this such that it works, but then to produce the real signature, you would have to invert h, and this is impossible. So this is the idea. Right? So to come up with a signature of something that you haven't, that you don't have a signature before of, you have to really invert your hash function at this point. So it's a very simple idea for a signature scheme. Okay, now Merkel, and again, I mean, now we are in the situation that we have the signature scheme, but we need one key for one signature. So if you really want to use this, you have to give people, you know, like thousands of keys and thousands of verification keys, and you have to sort of keep thousands of private keys. And this is practical. So here is what Merkel did. I mean, he says, okay, let's choose some parameter h, which will turn out to be a height of a tree. And now, when we do the key generation, we first produce all the keys that we need, which are, in this case, 2 to the h keys. So these are the secret keys, these are the public keys. Now, we don't want that many public keys, we want just one public key. So what we do is we apply the hash function. So these nodes are the hash values. Next, what we do is we construct a tree, and this tree, the parent, is the hash of the concatenation of its left and right child. And this is the root of the tree is the public. Okay, so that is the key generation. So there are still many signature keys, but there is just one public key, and it is derived from all these different verification keys using this hash tree. And the height of the tree is this parameter h. Okay, how do we sign? Okay, so now if we want to sign this document, this is the document, we select one signature key and one verification key. Say we select verification key and signature key number I. So then we use this key, this signature key, to produce the signature. And now the signature will contain the index I, this is the number of the key that we have chosen. It will also contain the verification key that the verifier does not know. And now the verifier, if he would only get this, he would not know whether this is the correct verification key, yes or no, because he only knows the public key. So we also help the verifier to find it. So we help the verifier to find his way in this tree. So this is the right neighbor of the verification key that we have chosen. Now this would be the next step on the way to the verification key. So we help the verifier with this next node. This would be the next step, and we help the verifier with this node. So this is the authentication path that will help the verifier to verify this key. Okay, let's see how this works with the verification. So the verifier obtains the index, the signature, the verification key, and the authentication path, and he has the public key anyway. He first checks whether the given that this is the right verification key, whether the signature is the right one. Now what he does is the following. He applies the hash function, and then he constructs the path. Okay, so once he has constructed the root, he asks himself, was this the right verification key? And if it was the right verification key, he's happy. So the signature actually consists of the signature itself and the authentication path, which helps the verifier to reduce this verification key to the public key. The question, here's a question for you, sort of, why does the verifier, why does he need I? Exactly. Right. So he needs the index because he needs to know whether this node is on the left side or on the right side, whether the next node is on the left side or on the right side, and so forth. So this is why he needs the index.
Can't you do something implicit by saying that you to go up, you just
there's all sorts of improvements. I will come to the improvements. And I think this is an interesting field also to improve the whole thing further. But it's a sort of a nice, simple idea, I find. So. However, there is a number of problems. So number one, as you have seen, you need large memory for the private key. Yeah? So this is all these private keys. Number two, the authentication path computation is expensive. Either you keep the whole authentication tree, or you construct the whole authentication tree. Constructing is expensive, and keeping it is very time consuming, and keeping it is very space consuming. So that is something you might not want to do. And the authentication tree computation is also expensive. Think about, we have thought we should, if we do it in the internet, we should be able to do, for example, 2 to the 40 signatures, then you get a huge tree. And to construct this is very expensive. So the question is, what can you do? So first of all, there is an improvement for the one-time signature scheme, which I want to show to you. And this is actually due to Winternetz, and it was explained in a paper by Dodds, Smart, and Stem. This is how this thing works. So the system parameter is, again, a hash function. And it is now the idea is we don't remember that in the original one-time signature scheme, we want to sign, we sign bit by bit. WinterNet says, don't sign bit by bit, sign W bits simultaneously, okay? All right, so, and the trick is this. So first of all, we need a few parameters. So we need a parameter T, which is basically N plus log N over W, and it is smaller than 2N. So we will see that we need fewer bits in the signature key. And this is what we do. We select, again, fewer random bits. Now, since we want to simultaneously sign many bits, this is what the verification key is. The verification key is obtained by applying the hash function several times. And several times means 2 to the W. W is the number of bits to be signed simultaneously. 2 to the W minus 1 applications of the hash function. So you can choose how many bits you want to sign simultaneously. Okay, so this is how the WinterNet's one-time signature scheme works. So suppose you have this hash value. So first of all, now here we assume that we sign 3 bits simultaneously, right? So this is W is equal to 3. So we split this thing into blocks of length 3. Then we obtain this many blocks. We want more, so we compute this difference. This little c is the difference. And then we pad so that we, in the end, obtain t blocks. And once we have these t blocks, the signature consists of x1 up to xt, and we apply the hash function b1 times this is b1, b2 times this is b2, and these numbers stand for the numbers that are represented by these bit strings. And here you can see that it becomes more complicated, but you can shrink the size of the signature key. And then how does the verification work? Well, again, this is what the verification key is, this is what the signature is, and of course the verifier can compute the bit string b1 up to bt. And then what he does is he sort of compensates that, like, he applies the hash function 2 to the W minus 1 minus B1 times, 2 to the W minus 1 minus B2 times, and so forth, 2 to the W minus 1 minus BT times. So this is an application of this hash function, and once he has done this, he should be have applied the hash function as many times as we see in the verification key. So what he does is just compares whether the public, whether the verification key equals the hash applied to phi 1 up to phi t, and these are the values, right? So it's kind of a simple thing. Now, so that solves a little bit, I mean, that makes the signature key smaller, and now what do we do with the one-time signature key generation? To make this reproducible, we will use pseudo-random number generator. So how does this work? It just works like this. So we start with a random seed. We apply a random number generator. We produce 2 new seeds. Random number generator x1, x2, xt, standard method. And so this is, so now we do this, and since it is deterministic, we can reproduce this then to obtain the next signature key. We do the same thing. So that is sort of the standard sort of scheme to generate these keys. Let's choose pseudo-random number generator. Now the authentication path computation. The problem is we can either, that I said this, to store the whole tree, this is 2 to the h plus 1 nodes, or we can recompute it. And Sudlow did the following. He shows that, in fact, storage of 3h nodes, this is the height of the tree, are sufficient, and the computation of 2h nodes are sufficient to produce each new signature. How does this work? Okay. So, the Sudlow algorithm is a little bit complicated. I just give you a few pictures how the Sudlow algorithm works. So, okay, here this is the first authentication pass. This is what the Sudlow algorithm starts with. It starts with the first authentication pass. This is the input. Now it prepares, once this thing is there, in the step zero, it prepares for the, so this is authentication path for step zero. Now, this is used in step zero, and the first authentication path is computed. And in our case, so this is now depth three. In our case, this means that we need three different stacks. So we have a green stack, which is responsible for height 2, a red stack, which is responsible for height 1, and a blue stack, which is responsible for height 0. Okay, now in step 0, we do this. Now, this node is node J, so 0, 1, or 2. No, replace node J if 2 to the J divides I plus 1. Let's see how this is. 2 to the 0 divides I plus 1, which is 1. So this is the formula. I don't want to go into this. So this is the start node. So this is where this new node is put. There. Turns out, so this is the blue node. All right? And this was it. Right, there's nothing we can do. Now let's see, what do we do in step 1? 2 to the 0 divides I plus 1, which is 2. So we have to replace this node with the 1, 2 to the 1 divides, so we have to replace this node. Okay, now where do we put the blue one? This is the formula. There. The red one, this is the formula. There. The problem now is that the red one should be at level 1. The red one is on the wrong level. So what do? We compute the neighbor of it and lift it to one level. So you get a feeling how this algorithm works. I don't give you the technical details, but you can sort of get a feeling. And you see, now, let's see. And this is the authentication path that you need in the next step. Okay, now, okay. Now we have seen, so now this is the new authentication path. We have used the criteria to replace the old nodes in the old authentication path. So this is the new one, but we have to update. Well, this is an interesting case again. It tells us that we should put the green one at place number 12, but 12 is outside, so we don't do this. So, okay. Now you can do it yourself, write down the formula. So, okay, so that is it is sort of a technical algorithm, but Sudlow it is a very clever algorithm, and Sudlow shows that it goes really fast. Right. Now let's next look at key generation. So that is the tree generation situation, and there is computational results by these three authors from 2004 that tells us if we want a depth of 20, so this is 2 to the 20 keys, what is 2 to the 20? It's 10 to the 6 to 7, right? Then it is 2.7 minutes. However, if you extrapolate this and you want 2 to the 40, you need 5.4 years to generate the key if you use the computer that they use. So that is far too long. And here is an idea. This is tree chain, yeah?
I have a question.
Sure.
Why would you want to, I mean, maybe I misunderstood the goal. So, I mean, why do we just want to create one big tree? Like the standard, my understanding is the standard idea with this kind of thing is, you know, you create a reasonable sized tree, and when you get to the end, you use the last signatures to sign the node of a new tree, and so on and so forth. So you never have to deal with
No.
In order
to compute the public key, you need in advance, you have to give the people your public key. And the public key is the node of the whole tree. And if you want to know what the node is, what the root of the whole tree, and if you don't want to know what the root of the whole tree is, you need to compute it.
Yeah.
Unless
the question is, why would you want to use one huge tree as opposed to, you create a
well,
tree.
We want to distribute, like if we are in a sort of web server situation, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you are a bank. And then you want the people to be able to to verify your signatures, and this is manual. You don't want to change your public key all over.
I'm not asking what.
I think he's going to describe chaining next. So I think
something smarter than chaining. Chaining involves a linear increase in your signature length.
So you double things, so you're always never
exactly.
Doing a factor of two more work.
I think you are sort of ahead of my talk. Maybe.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't mean to. Didn't want to.
Okay, fine. No problem. This is a collection of very intelligent people, so it's great. Okay, so this is tree chain. Is this the same that you were thinking of?
I think so, and I think I saw it presented. I mean, long before 2005. But
okay. Okay, it's possible. It's possible. I haven't seen it, but if I would be, I would be quite happy to see the reference to it. But so this is how tree chaining works, independently of who discovered it. You have two trees, and the top tree. The root of the top tree is the public key. And this is how you sign. Okay, suppose you use signature key with index I. Then you use this thing to produce your signature as before. But now the root of the subtree is not authenticated because people only know this one. So what you do next is you will sign this root using this tree. So now the signature consists of an authentication path in the lower tree and an authentication path in the upper tree, and the upper tree signs the root of the lower tree. Is this what you are?
I think it's more or less equivalent.
Okay, good. So how do you verify? Well, now everybody can imagine how to verify this. First of all, you verify the signature. Next, you construct your the root lower tree. You check the signature of the lower tree. Construct higher tree, and you ask yourself, is that the public key? And then once these keys are used up, you construct the next lower tree. So in fact, we need two trees of height, half as the full height. right? So let me show you some timings here. Okay. So we use W equal to 2. So we have 2 to the h possible signatures. So this is what the key generation takes. Now, it is interesting that signatures are very fast. So we have, so this is SHA-1, and we have 9.2 milliseconds, 12.4 milliseconds, 14.9 milliseconds for signing. So this is really competitive. Verifying is even more competitive, 1.3 milliseconds, 1.4 milliseconds, 1.3 milliseconds. Now you can ask yourself, what is it faster? But this is just, you know, what happened. Okay. So this is for W equal to 3, which makes keys smaller. Now the times for signing slightly increase, the times for key generation slightly increase, verification time is slightly increased, but it is still okay. Let's look at sizes. So the public key is really small. Secret key. Remember, the secret key now is just this random number that you start with. So secret key. Small, and the signatures. Well, they are bigger than the signatures that we are used to from RSA, but they're not really big. So I think the sizes are competitive in many contexts, even if we want to sign the produce 2 to the 40 signatures. And you can see when we use W equal to 3, then the signatures get smaller. But the times go up slightly. So you can experiment with these things a little bit, but you can see from the timings this is really competitive. So we also did SHA-256. And you can see, I mean, like the key generation almost doubles. I think we have a factor of 2 in there, which is reasonable. And again, for W equal to 3, it is also a similar situation. Sizes go up. But they are still reasonable. So what we can see from this is we obtain a signature scheme that produces many signatures with one public key very efficiently. The interesting thing is whenever you have a new hash function, you have a new signature scheme. So insecure hash function, you don't care. Use another hash function, get another signature scheme. Use another hash function, get another signature. That kind of eliminates number theory from signing, almost. Well, I will say something, a comment on this almost a little later, but you know, there is all sorts of ways of producing hash functions, right? If you talk to the experts, you know, every block cipher gives rise to a hash function. So we were talking about this at Crypto. So there's various ways. And so this sort of the flexibility goes down one step. We don't talk about replacing signature schemes anymore. We talk about replacing hash functions in this scheme, which is an interesting thought. So even if a hash function turns out to be insecure, and it is my feeling that there are many more hash functions than signature schemes, many more. Now, let me come back to number theory. This is how it's revisited. There is interesting work by Aitami, Chandra, Regev, and Luashevsky, Tiger, and Rose. And so these people are able to produce hash functions security can be reduced to hard lattice problems. So now you plug in these hash functions, and we have security proofs for the this modified Merkle system, and all of a sudden you get a fully proofed signature scheme based on lattice basis reduction. So if you compose those two things, which is an interesting observation. So the next thing that we will be doing is we will combine these two things and see how what the efficiency will give us. But this is an example that this kind of result is also interesting in another direction. So if someone comes up in a number theoretic context with a new hash function, which we have there, you obtain new signature schemes that are based on all sorts of number theoretic algebraic properties. So number theory and algebra is back in business. And it is easier. I mean, it seems that it is easier to produce hash functions from these problems than signature schemes directly or even public key encryption schemes. So the question is, it seems that we get provably secure and efficient. This is still a question mark, we don't know, but Daniele told me that they seem to be efficient. I don't know. I mean,
if you take SHA-1, the output size is 100 or 200 bits. These lattice-based functions are reasonably efficient if you use only one of them. The output becomes thousands of bits. So
yeah.
Once you plug it in this tree construction, I'm not sure, but the numbers that you get will be bigger by basically an order of magnitude.
But still, I mean, there was much progress in the past in producing such hash functions. I mean, if you look at ITAI's initial work, and if you look at the work that you have been doing now, there's so much progress that we can expect to get something like efficient hash functions based on lattices. So what we did is we wanted to make this practical, so we produced a plugin for Microsoft Outlook, so it can be downloaded from our website. So now what you can do is, you can see here, maybe you cannot read this, SHA-256 Merkle tree. This is the certificate, and you can sign messages in Microsoft Outlook with this. And so we produced the ASN1 encoding and everything, and it, yeah. So this works, and it really, I mean, it, and if you are interested in this, there is an open source crypto library that we implement as a. This means not I, but the students that are working in my research group, and it is called Flexi Provider, and this is the URL www.flexiprovider.de, and there's all sorts of things. We also, for example, implemented Ntrue. We are not sure whether we are allowed to do this. Well, anyway, what we try to do there is to give people access to all sorts of also innovative crypto schemes so that they can experiment with this. And the construction is such that when we have this in the Flexi provider, we automatically have it, for example, in Microsoft Outlook. We are now also working on getting it into SSL or TLS so that we can really show, I mean, these things are not only theoretical, but will eventually be practical. So that is pretty much what I wanted to say. Thank you very much.